So, we've heard a lot about how we can automate cars, how we can make things more accessible, but we haven't really talked about the pedestrians. So to do that, I'd like to welcome up Gavin Neat from Neatbox, who's going to talk a little bit about that. He wasn't so keen on me saying this, but I really want to say how we can automate pedestrians.
I'll just take a couple of seconds. I've got a friend behind this RNIB tech share poster here. Oh, it's a large pedestrian crossing that I have to carry with me everywhere.
Document con edit, edit, edit. B document contents. Double tap to edit. Hello, TechShare delegates. It is a real pleasure to be with you today. For one reason, I feel as if I am coming home. As for 18 years, I was a guide dog mobility instructor with Guide Dogs for the Blind. But perhaps the reason that makes me even happier is that in all of the presentations I do, this is the one where I know I won't have to explain how a visually impaired person can use a smartphone, or what voiceover or talkback are. Ellipsis. I guess I can fill in the extra time I have with jokes. How can you tell when one of your friends has a new iPhone? Don't worry, they will tell you. Ha. Ellipsis. Ha. Ellipsis. Ha. Anyway, perhaps I should stop being lazy and start presenting.
Always important to turn your voiceover off. Oh, wow. Maybe I should have written in pause for applause, but I didn't write that in there. But it's nice. Next time. I'm really excited to be here. I really am excited to be here because I spent 18 years as a guide dog mobility instructor. My job was training people how to use guide dogs, and I loved it. It was one of the best jobs in the world until I suppose I had a little bit of an epiphany in the early 2001, 2002, when I was noticing more people turn up to train with me with, well, initially it was probably HumanWare's Trekker and then Trekker Breeze. And I was going, wow, something's changing here. What's actually happening in this world? And then I saw people coming along with iPhones and iPads, and they were talking to them and they were using them. And I was going, oh, I need to upskill. This is some stuff I don't know about. I need to get involved in this technology. And I introduced a tech share talk on my, a tech talk on each of my classes, just as much for me to learn about what my clients were using. And in a way, I wanted to upskill myself. But then they were talking to each other, and then they were saying, wow, we're doing this and we're doing that, and this is really great, and that's really rubbish, and I need to improve that, and I need to contact Apple customer service, or whatever it might be. And people were saying, this is something that's happening now. And I thought back in 2005, wow, this is cool. This is the future. But I didn't do anything about it. What I realized was that the accessibility in smartphones had just changed. It turned a corner. It said, we can make a world that's more inclusive. And this isn't just Apple. Samsung are doing some awesome stuff and some brilliant stuff on Android as well. And TalkBack is improving all the time. But majority of my clients were using Apple at that time. And I understood that if that's what they were using at that point, that's what they wanted to use. So what I did was I looked at different things that potentially could be changed by the use of technology. And these were things that I saw as a problem, or rather, things that I saw that my clients had as a problem. And on the screen, I have now a picture of me in much more comfortable times because I'm wearing a suit and tie today, which I might just unloosen a little. In the picture on the screen is me and a fantastic guide dog owner called Murray Jenkinson in Musselburgh, all places in Edinburgh, or just outside Edinburgh. And Murray is at a down curb with his guide dog, and the pole is away to the right. And Murray's arrived there, he's continued his straight line, and I'm going to be talking about stuff now that a lot of sighted people aren't going to understand. Please forgive me, the guide dog owners and visually impaired people will know what I'm talking about. He's followed his straight line. He's got to the down curb. He's come up to his number one position. He's gone up to his number two position. He's paused. He's put a little bit of tension on his handle, and he's told his dog to wait. He's reached out with his right hand, because that's where the pole is, obviously, and it's not there. So Murray goes, oh, okay, right, okay, wait. Puts his handle down, lengthens his lead, steps to the right, walks away from where he should have been crossing from. It's not there either. And in fact, in the picture you've got on the screen, it's actually a bit of a rounded curb. So he's running the risk of stepping into the road even more. So the more I looked at this, the more I started talking to organizations like what was called Peak at the time, which is a Dutch company, or it's now a Dutch company. It went to Imtech and now it's called Dinic. That's the modern world we live in. You've got to rebrand. So I spoke to these guys and I said, well, look, why do we have this situation? And this time 2 years ago, I spoke at a conference in Warwick University to a room full of traffic engineers. I was there yesterday speaking again before I hot-footed up here and got here at two in the morning. And they went, oh, wow, yeah, we didn't know this was a problem. You mean you have to go to the button and then, of course, yeah. And then once you've pressed the button, you've either got to hold on to the tactile cone if there's an audible signal, and then you've got to get back to the curb edge. It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare. And my clients were having a real problem. But the more I looked at this, the more I realized this was a massive problem for wheelchair users, people with MS, somebody with Parkinson's, somebody in a power chair, somebody who was pushing somebody else in a wheelchair. How do you access the button? So I just started looking at ways that we could use that. And of course, all of my knowledge had been through guide dogs and then with mobile technology. And we started looking at the mobile phone as a way of pressing the button. And a lot of people might know about RFID technology, which is radio frequency, which is like a little key fob that you might have. But what we thought, what I thought at the time, was that's not inclusive. That's not the way the world is going. We don't want people to buy kit. We want somebody to use the kit they've already got in their hand. And the kit, well, I don't know, a show of hands, please. Does anybody not have a smartphone? There we go. Right, okay. I did this a couple of years ago. It was about, I had to ask the question, who's got a smartphone? And now I've learned from that lesson that it takes a lot less time if you just go, who hasn't? Because nobody, there's not one person in here who doesn't own a smartphone, or they're just really shy. So what I realized was that we could press the button with the actual phone. So that's what we did. We started pressing the button with the mobile phone. We set up a pedestrian crossing in Edinburgh in 2011, and we put some hardware into the box using Bluetooth low energy. This is long before anybody had thought of the word iBeacons. We were using Bluetooth low energy, or Bluetooth 4.0, back in 2012 when it first started. And we put it into the phone, and we walked up to a crossing, and we took the phone out of our pocket and we pressed the button. We went, wow, how cool is that? And everybody went, oh, actually, no, I prefer it was in my pocket. So we changed it. We actually put it so that you have a certain amount of time and it presses the button for you automatically. So you walk up to the road, oh, you run the app in your pocket, you walk up to the road, get to the curb edge where you want to cross from, whether you're in a wheelchair or mobility scooter, or if somebody's being pushed in a wheelchair, or if you're a guide dog or a long cane, the list is endless. Oh, a parent pushing a buggy with two children in it. I'll just leave that here while I go across and press the button. It's not going to happen. So we put it all onto the mobile phone. I'm going to show you a demo, which is kind of cool. And the picture. Oh, go back one quickly. I'll pause it there. Okay, so I'll very quickly just show you the demo on the phone before we just show you a video that Ian Hamilton did for us. And I'll talk you through. Unfortunately, the crossing that I have, it isn't an audible crossing, but there is a red light which is showing, which is obviously don't walk. So I'm now going to start the app running. This is signifying you leaving home. It's now running in your pocket. The phone is looking for the crossing, and this is where it starts getting a little bit cool, because we've now got it coming up on the screen as Princess Street heading north. So we already have wayfinding tied into this with some hardware that is installed in a pedestrian crossing that is live 365 days a year and has the power consumption of one coin cell battery for that entire time. This is not a large problem for power. So now if I press the button on the mobile phone, I've just pressed the button on the pedestrian crossing and the red light has just come up. So we're now just waiting for the green man to come on. Just to take that one step further, if I then go into the settings on the phone, I can change it so that it presses the button after 6 seconds. Oi, stop sending me text messages while I'm here. Okay, so now if I just put this on the desk, signify that being in my pocket, when it goes through its cycle, after 6 seconds it presses the button. And I have to tell you, DFT, Transport for London, all the traffic engineers yesterday at Warwick University were getting, ooh, this is kind of cool. We might not have to move so many pedestrian crossing poles and then start blocking it for double buggies and things like that. So it will go through the process of pressing the button again now. A little round of applause if it does it, please. Thank you. Just to show the people who are visually impaired it's happened. Thank you. We were very lucky because we had some good interest. We've installed 6 of these in Edinburgh. We've got one at RBS Gogobone, which I'll show you in a second. We've got one at Holyrood Palace. We had a few MSPs come to see it. We've got one at we've got four at Lauriston Place. We've also had the offer of installing one in London with TfL, which is a massive step forward. And fortunately, just recently, Transurf contacted us and said, would you like to install seven in Largs? And we went, well, it's not as close as London. But then I started thinking, oh, yeah, Local Hero, that's a good movie. We could sort of like say, look at Largs. We've managed to put seven out there. They're going to be kind of cool. So this is the video that BBC did for us just recently at RBS Gogobone. Hopefully we'll have some sound. Is that going to work, guys?
Pressing a button to cross a road isn't hard. Unless you can't reach it or see to find it.
One of the difficulties I have with pedestrian crossings is sometimes getting close to the pole. Very often they're very much to the side and difficult to reach. There's one that I use occasionally where you've almost got to go into the bushes at the side before you can reach the button. Being able to come up to the crossing without having to get close to the pole would be an advantage for me.
So when you approach the crossing with this in your pocket working independently, it will just press the button for you.
A company in Edinburgh called Neatbox has developed a way of activating crossings via a smart device. The invention was developed by a former guide dog instructor who realised how difficult it was for disabled people to press the button.
It's really very simple. The person approaches the pedestrian crossing, the mobile phone which is running the application is in their pocket, and it recognises the crossing and presses the button for them. The person then just waits for the audible signal and crosses the road. We install hardware into every single pole, every single box at the crossing. That sends out a signal, the mobile phone communicates with that totally independently of the person, and it's all happening in the background.
For someone who's totally blind like me, who can see absolutely nothing, a big open space like this one can be very confusing, particularly when you're trying to find the reception.
It's hoped that the same technology could alert staff if a disabled person needs help.
Hi, Ian.
Yes?
I'm Tracy. Welcome to Gogobone.
Oh, hi. Nice to meet you. If I just eat an elbow, that'd be
great. Yes, that's fine. Okay.
Come on, Renton.
We install our beacons inside the entrance to these buildings. As soon as the person gets close to the beacon, their phone interacts with that, and then their phone interacts with the reception or the customer service team. So it's very simple. They know the person's arrived.
This is the first personalised pedestrian crossing in the world, and it's here in Edinburgh. The challenge now for Gavin and his Neatbox is to persuade local authorities and businesses to install his invention. Ian Hamilton, reporting Scotland, Edinburgh.
Oh, I think somebody's tweeting there. Okay, two rounds of applause. Awesome, thank you. Installing and getting involved with local authorities is massive. We've already mentioned Largs, TfL, were very interested. We put the BBC video out recently, and we were contacted by a Canadian company who said, we want this in Canada, and then said, would you send us your software and hardware so we can install it? And I went, no, I don't think so. And they said, okay, we'll send you a crossing. So just about 3 weeks ago, I got a Canadian pedestrian crossing in the post, and we've now started integrating it into the... The president of the company came to Edinburgh last week and spent a day with us talking about accessibility and inclusivity. So that's a massive step forward. TfL is a massive step forward. The customer services app it's not launched, but we've got a beta version that is now online. And we're setting up in the Hilton Hotel on Doubletree Hilton Hotel on Bread Street in Edinburgh. And we're looking for people to go in and test it and get free cups of coffee. So if you'd like to be involved in that, then have a little chat to me later. The reason we went down customer service route was because, as I maintain with every product that we produce at Neatbox, the solution starts with the people who understand the problem. And we've already had a fantastic presentation about the gentleman, and I do apologise, I forgot your name, but to have a child with a disability, you go, I need to do something about this. Well, that's a solution held by a problem holder. He had the ability to come up with a solution. I had the ability to understand the problem, and I thought I need to come up with a solution. I left Guide Dogs 2 years ago in order to do that. We're now moving forward with this technology, and having seen the problems there are with customer service, and the chaps from Uber know this well enough, if you go into a building and the person has some advanced knowledge of you based on your requirements, what you've put into your app, not what they think they need to do to you, this is not service to you, this is service for you, if they get some information like name, photograph, where you're from, and then specifically a disability you might want assistance with, when you walk through the door, they will get a ping, they will look down at their web-based server, and it will say, Mr. Smith has just arrived, he has a visual impairment, make sure you do five top tips. Introduce yourself. Make sure that they know where you are. Make sure that if you're leaving, you say you're going. And that can really help the whole customer service process, hence why Hilton have said that they really want to do it. So what's next for Neatbox? I think, it's not supposed to do it twice. The video was just about to start again. The customer service is going to be how we're moving this forward. The pedestrian crossing, we're looking for certification this year, working with DFT and Topaz, which is a setup with them. But ultimately, we can, in the future, with any luck, cover customer service for hotels, hospitals, train stations, taxis, dare I say that? Office buildings, festivals, concerts, so that the people who are giving you the customer service when you arrive know how you want them to actually include you. It's massive for us, and we hope it's going to be massive for you guys in the future, because ultimately that's who we want to help. Thank you very much indeed, and I hope there'll be time for questions.